Okay, our second case today and the last case of the week is case number 19-11984, Kanjendran Ratnam versus the Attorney General. And can you help me pronounce your name, Mr. Rudrakumar? Is that right?
Yes, almost, Your Honor. Rudrakumar.
Okay, thank you very much for the help. You can start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the panel, my name is Viswanathan Rudrakumaran. I represent the petitioner in this case, Mr. Kanjendran Ratnam. One of the first issue in this case, as the court has stated in the stay opinion, when the motion for stay was granted, the court explicitly stated, agreed with the petitioner, that the BIA completely ignored to adjudicate the petitioner's claim based on a particular social group, namely failed Tamil asylum seekers. So the court said that the case should be remanded to the board. The government in their brief argued, Your Honor, based on a footnote in which the board, the BIA said, based on the, because of the adverse credibility finding, they don't have to adjudicate their other remaining arguments. The adverse credibility finding that hinge that is mostly relevant to past persecution. In fact, the immigration judge himself, in his opinion, stated that the adverse credibility finding is foreclosed the past persecution case claim, but not necessarily the well-founded fear of future persecution, Your Honor. And the petitioner, in her brief to the BIA, cited the Second Circuit case, the Ninth Circuit case, and argued that even if there is an adverse credibility finding pertains to past persecution on account of the personal experience, it does not foreclose your claim of future persecution based on your status. It's an objective fact. Then the question comes whether the petitioner's status as a Sri Lankan citizen and Tamil is whether the board's finding that it was not established that he is a Sri Lankan citizen or a Tamil is supported by substantial evidence. I divide both that particular argument, saying first, whether it is established that he is a Sri Lankan citizen. You know, the Department of Homeland Security alleged, I accept it alleged that he is a citizen. But what the immigration judge said after the proceedings, the immigration judge stated that after the proceedings, that he sustained the charge. So if he sustained the charge, that means that is a fact. He sustained the DHS charge that he is a Sri Lankan citizen. That means that he is a Sri Lankan citizen. So for the removal,
in the BIA decision, the very first line indicates that your client is a quote native and citizen of Sri Lanka.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Well, I think at least on that point, you've got a good argument.
Yes,
because
sir.
although the BIA sustained the adverse credibility finding, it says that your client is a native and citizen of Sri Lanka.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Then I go to the other aspect of the argument, whether my client is a Tamil or not. And the government's main argument, because of the spelling errors, there are different spellings in various documents. These are, you know, these are translation of his names. In fact, in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, there is an op-ed page about the vice presidential nominee, Kamala Harris. In the Wall Street Journal article, they said her name, Kamala, K-A-M-A-L-A, is spelled by someone as Kambala, K-A-M-B-O-B-A-L-A. And some people spell it as C-O-M-M-A-L-A. So this is very common. When someone's name is translated into a different language, it's spelled differently, Your Honor. If they write our names in Spanish language, there will be the three or four versions of our language. So as Shakespeare said, a rose by any other name smell as sweet, a Tamil by any other name still a Tamil. He can be at X, his name can be X or his name can be Y, he's still a Tamil. And when the whole proceeding was in Tamil, and then the government comes and say his Tamil ethnicity was not established.
Well, what do you say? So I think you've got strong arguments on his ethnicity and his name.
Thank you.
What do you say about the credibility determination as to his past persecution and the credibility determination as to how he got to the United States?
Okay. There are two responses to that, Your Honor. First, even if the court sustained that adverse credibility finding about what happened to him in Sri Lanka and how he got here, those adverse credibility findings have nothing to do with his future, the well-founded fear of persecution, which I have raised as based on a particular social group as a Tamil asylum seeker. So arguendo, I say the court sustained the adverse credibility finding of the BIA and the IJ pertains to his past experience, what happened to him, how he got here. The initial response, that has nothing to do with the fact if he's returned to Sri Lanka as a failed Tamil asylum seeker. So that has no relevance whatsoever. That's what our initial argument was. The second prong argument, this is a common sense. The common sense rule should be applied in the adverse credibility finding. And here they are also, with respect to the past persecution, whatever happened to him, the board and the IJ rely mostly on this document, saying in different documents, his father's death certificate. It says that his name is spelled is differently. Again, they were harping on the different spelling in those documents. That's one of the things. The second thing the board said, that the father's death certificate says that he was drowned. And then there's nothing there to show that he was killed by the army. No, this is a common sense thing. When we are in the world, a government will issue a death certificate stating their own army killed the person. We are in the world, Your Honor. These are common sense. So the adverse credibility finding, our argument is, the common sense rule should be applicable. And he also said they suspected in the testimony. He said the family suspect the army must have pushed him into the well, and that's how he got into the thing. And regarding the route, how he came here in the United States, because the judge said there's no stamp in the passport. But his response, the agent, this is not the regular visit. He got onto the plane from Sri Lanka and land here in New York with a stamp and everything. This is not the same travel they use. They come through various illegal means, and it's quite possible that it cannot be that they don't put the stamp, whether he was in Haiti.
But doesn't it go farther than that, though? Wasn't there a problem where he had said one time, and this is just a question, where he had said one time, I went through these countries to get to the United States, and then he changed that at a future point and added some countries and changed his story about how
he testified he studied at grade 6 or something like that. They really don't know the world map, which country they came through. In fact, there is a Ninth Circuit case. In fact, even in the U.S., a lot of people don't know what names of the countries. Now, this is I don't think that can be a basis for an adverse credibility finding, and because they traveled through various countries several times. So it's not a regular travel, that he got into, his passport got stamped and he came here. So in that case, so our argument that with respect to the past persecution claim, the credibility issue, the court should apply common sense rule, rather than rigidly focusing on a simple, small.
But counsel, isn't that really a credibility determination? And that's not something for an appellate court to do, which is you have someone there who listened to the testimony and found that your client was not credible on how he got here, because most people will remember how they got somewhere, particularly if they're traveling through different countries.
The two response, Your Honor. First, as you said, that the credibility determination can be overturned based on substantial evidence. But what we are saying is the court should remand the case, instructing the adjudicator to apply common sense rule, because that rule has been applied in other instances also. So our main argument, I'm not challenging much, because the court, it's an appellate court, you cannot judge in the first instance. But the court can direct the adjudicator, the immigration judge in the remand, just apply the common sense rule and again make a credibility determination. So that's with respect to the past persecution claim. And then the one more thing, Your Honor, about the claim for based on pattern or practice of persecution. The immigration judge said, no, there is no pattern or practice of persecution. The petitioner argued to the board. The board did not address at all. They did not address at all. So here also, even if the court sustains the adverse credibility finding, that is not fatal or undermine his argument as a pattern of practice or persecution of Tamils in the island of Sri Lanka. That's all, Your Honor. Thank you. I save my 2 minutes for the rebuttal if necessary.
You still have 2 minutes if you would like that. You're still on your time before you get to rebuttal. But if you want to save all of that time for rebuttal, that's fine too.
Yes, and I'll save it for the rebuttal, Your Honor, that 2 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. Brian, if you could please add those 2 minutes to his rebuttal time. Okay, Ms. Moresi, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Kristen Moresi, appearing on behalf of the U.S. General Attorney General. Let me just say at the start, my apologies for the first 3 minutes of opposing counsel's arguments. I wasn't connected to the feed, so I didn't hear, I think, the first set of specific arguments, which I presume went to the petitioner's, the finding that petitioner was not credible with regard to his ethnicity. And I do think that that's certainly where we want to begin. I think the big issue in this case is
can I ask you one question first?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Move into that. There's really no question that he is a native and citizen of Sri Lanka, right?
Your Honor, we would still argue that while it's contained in DHS documents and the agency's decision on that point, that it was still his burden of proving that fact. However,
Hold on, because I want to try to narrow the issues here. The charge that was levied against him alleged that he was a citizen and national of Sri Lanka, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the BIA, in its very first line of its opinion, says that he is a native and citizen of Sri Lanka. And then it addresses.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then it addresses his future persecution claim upon return on the assumption that he is a citizen of Sri Lanka. I'm just not sure that that's an issue anymore. I understand the ethnicity about being a Tamil, but upon being a citizen and native of Sri Lanka, I'm not sure there's anything to fight about in this record. Am I mistaken?
Certainly, Your Honor. I understand your point, and I think that the narrower and more important issue in this case is Tamil ethnicity. And I think that that should be the court's focus and is the overarching issue in this case. And I think in that regard, that given that it was petitioner's burden to make that baseline showing of identity, specifically his Tamil ethnicity, his failure to meet his burden of proof on that point and the agency's finding that he did not establish his Tamil ethnicity in this case was fatal to all of his claims and is supported by substantial record evidence. The agency pointed to several reasons for its adverse credibility finding, and specifically its finding that petitioner failed to establish through credible testimony or reliable documentation that he was, in fact, Tamil. I think that the evidence that the agency pointed to, such as the fact that, first of all, document fraud is prevalent in Sri Lanka, particularly in the city of Colombo, the petitioner's last city that he visited before leaving the country with an agent or smuggler, as he refers to the gentleman who helped him. The fact that the record evidence shows that there are genuine documents created from fraudulent documents and fraudulent documents created in order to facilitate individuals to leave the country against the backdrop of the problems with petitioner's documentary evidence certainly supports the conclusion that petitioner's evidence was not reliable. There are at least four different spellings of petitioner's name throughout the record documents, some of which are contained within the same documents. Petitioner's passport, which was unauthenticated, contains two different spellings of petitioner's name, one of which petitioner handwrote himself and also contrasts with petitioner's spelling of his name in his asylum application.
Is this relevant that when he testified, I believe they had a translator and he was not really able, the translator felt that he was not proficient in the language?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not certain I understand the question.
Was there evidence in the, I mean, I thought there was a credibility determination made that when the translator was trying to translate, that the Mr. Ratnam had issues or difficulty understanding the translator himself?
Your Honor, I think that at one of the earliest hearing dates, there was an issue understanding a translator, and the immigration judge at that point stopped the hearing, and it was continued on a different date. And during petitioner's merits hearing, where he testified in support of his claims, the transcript shows that where there was a problem understanding either by the interpreter or by the petitioner, the question was repeated or rephrased, and petitioner's counsel didn't raise an argument that there was a problem with the overall translation of petitioner's testimony or in his understanding. And I think that with regard to the issue of the passport, again, the passport, which contains two different spellings of petitioner's name, is not authenticated. And additionally, additional evidence that this was not a reliable document is that it omits travel stamps from three of the countries that at one point petitioner claimed he traveled through in his travels to the United States. As Your Honors pointed out, petitioner's testimony was inconsistent on that point regarding the countries he visited. And he testified that he interacted with immigration officials in Panama and Colombia, yet there are no travel stamps indicating travels to such countries.
Can I ask you a question? I'm having a difficult time understanding why these inconsistencies matter. So as a matter of sort of why an immigration judge would care about whether someone, you know, misrepresented their route to the United States, or why an immigration judge would care if someone had a fake Sri Lankan passport instead of a real Sri Lankan passport. Why, as a practical matter, why does that matter?
Certainly, Your Honor, I think it matters in this case within the context of the totality of the circumstances of petitioner's testimony and documentation. That passport is one of the documents that would be indicative of petitioner's identity and ethnicity, and given the problems with it, I think it was evident by the agency that who's to say if this in fact was identifying the petitioner or someone else or only certain portions of petitioner's identity as truthful. And while taken in a bubble, the inconsistencies surrounding petitioner's travels to the United States may not have in and of themselves supported the agency's adverse credibility determination. Taken in conjunction with the other inconsistencies and specifically the identity problems in this case, I think that they do lend further support to the agency's decision here.
Could you explain to me, just as a practical matter, why someone would get a fake passport in Sri Lanka that is a fake Sri Lankan? I mean, if I were in Sri Lanka wanting to come to the United States, I would try to get a fake United States passport and not a fake Sri Lankan passport, but just I must be missing something there as to why you would do that.
Certainly, Your Honor, I can't speculate specifically as to why, but I suppose if there were portions of your identity that you wouldn't want known by immigration officials there or here, there could be reasons to seek out falsified documents in order to leave your home country or enter the United States.
But I mean, what would those be? I mean, I guess that's my question.
Depending on your past, depending on if there was a criminal past, depending on if there were issues that you would not want to follow you to the United States, I think that there could be a variety of reasons. I think that the fact that it is so prevalent in Sri Lanka and in Colombo demonstrates that there are many people who do have reasons to seek these false documents. The exact ones, I can't say.
If,
Your Honors, I'd also like to...
If you are mistaken about the adverse credibility finding, then the BIA had to address his two claims of possible persecution upon return as a Tamil, right? As a Tamil failed asylum seeker, and the pattern and practice claim about persecution of Tamils, right?
Yes, Your Honor. If this court finds that substantial evidence doesn't support the agency's adverse credibility determination, or specifically its finding that petitioner did not meet his burden of proving his Tamil ethnicity. I do believe that it would be within the board's purview and area of expertise to consider how that affected the general backdrop of its adverse credibility determination, or for the board to consider the merits-based claim. However, for the reasons that the government has discussed so far, I think that substantial evidence certainly does support the agency's conclusion in this regard. I know at one point in petitioner's brief, he made mention of the fact that simply because he spoke the Tamil language, that establishes his Tamil ethnicity. But respondent would like to point out that that in and of itself would not be de facto evidence of ethnicity. The difference between the Tamil ethnicity and the Tamil language is documented in the record, I think as evidenced by the fact that the record includes information regarding the main ethnicities in Sri Lanka, the third largest of which is Muslim. And the Sri Lankan Muslims, who are also referred to as Moors in the record, predominantly speak Tamil. The record includes instances discussing Tamil-speaking Muslims in Sri Lanka. So population, 10% of the population, which would be approximately 2 million people, many of which speak Tamil, I think doesn't mean that simply because petitioner spoke the Tamil language, the record compels the conclusion that he is of Tamil ethnicity, particularly in the face of the numerous inconsistencies and the multiple problems with his documentary evidence in this case.
Do you have the BIA's decision there before you?
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
Okay. On page 2, third paragraph.
Yes, Your Honor.
Addresses the claim that he has a well-founded fear of persecution on account of being a failed asylum seeker, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. In so doing, the BIA refers to the immigration judge's order at page 12. On page,
yes, Your Honor.
On page 12, the immigration judge addresses the claim of persecution with regards to Tamils who are failed asylum seekers. So do you think the BIA addressed his claim that he is a Tamil failed asylum seeker if he's forced to return to Sri Lanka or not?
Your Honor, I don't believe that the board reached that issue. At the beginning of that paragraph where it stated that notwithstanding the adverse credibility determination, it was going to consider this route for relief, this particular social group that did not hinge at all on petitioner's identity as a Tamil or his credibility. So I think in the context of that discussion, the board is talking about failed asylum seekers there. Okay. The board, I don't think, did discuss it with the addition of Tamil failed asylum seekers, nor would we argue was it required to, simply because the immigration judge made these alternate findings. The board's finding and upholding of the agency's, of the immigration judge's decision that petitioner wasn't credible as to his claims of harm or his identity was fatal to his claims. Without that, he couldn't prove his membership in a particular social group comprised of Tamil asylum seekers, and his claims would fail on that basis.
Let me ask you another question about the BIA's decision. So with respect to the credibility determination, the BIA says that this is a quote, the respondent's general assertion is insufficient to establish clear error in the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding, end quote. The BIA says, quote, the respondent does not specifically challenge these findings, end quote, about the credibility determination. So did the BIA determine that he had just not raised these issues sufficiently in front of them on appeal from the IJ?
Your Honor, it's my understanding in that portion of the board's decision that it was finding that some of these specific bases for the immigration judge's larger credibility determination, the issues and inconsistencies surrounding the manner and cause of petitioner's father's death, his father's name, the mistreatment that he allegedly experienced from the Sri Lankan army, and his travels to the United States were not specifically brought up or addressed or discussed in his brief on appeal to the board. There was general statements that made contending that he was credible or that there weren't inconsistencies, but those specific inconsistencies were not addressed. Rather, the brief focused on the identity claim and the identity problems that the immigration judge addressed. However, Your Honors, even if this court finds that petitioner did exhaust those issues, as respondent also discussed in our brief, I think that these inconsistencies highlight the problems with petitioner's case. Several of these inconsistencies went to the heart of his claims and certainly suggest that his claims may have been embellished or changed over time. And all of those specific findings would support an adverse credibility determination. This court has found that where an applicant's testimony is not consistent with documentation or where it includes embellishment, an agency's adverse credibility finding is supported by substantial evidence. In this case, Your Honors, the government would say that because, Your Honors, I see I'm out of time. If I may finish.
You can wrap up.
Thank you so much, Your Honor. In this case, the respondent would contend that because the agency pointed out not just one, but numerous bases for doubting the reliability of petitioner's supporting documentation and identity documents, and pointed out numerous inconsistencies in petitioner's claims of harm, including inconsistencies that went to the heart of his claims, that even if the court disagrees, the record certainly does not compel the conclusion that petitioner met his burden of proving his identity and his claim of harm through credible testimony or reliable documentation. For those reasons, Your Honors, we ask that you uphold the agency's decision, and thank you for your time.
All right, thank you so much. All right, you have five minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Macaron.
With respect to adverse credibility, Your Honor, there are two parts. One is what happened to him in Sri Lanka. The other one is regarding his identity, Your Honor. There are two parts here. So even if the court sustained the adverse credibility finding pertains to what happened to him or his father, that does not have any impact on his identity, whether he is a Tamil or not, Your Honor. And this is the first time the government is raising the argument that there are Sri Lankan Muslims there, majority, they also speak Tamil, so speaking Tamil is not enough. Yeah. But factually, that's not correct. Even the country condition materials will show the Muslims are the minority, that the Sinhalese and the Tamils are the majority. But think the government's argument against saying that the petitioner did not establish identity based on the spelling mistakes, the translation of his name, that's the only thing they are banging on. There's nothing else to disprove that he's not a Tamil. And then with respect to the
burden is on your client to prove that he is of Tamil ethnicity. No one is, I think at this point, the fact that he's a native and citizen of Sri Lanka, that's off the table. The question is whether or not he has proved that he is of Tamil ethnicity. Anyone could speak a language. Just because you speak French or you speak German or you speak Spanish does not mean that you are of that ethnicity. So the fact that he speaks Tamil does not in and of itself is not dispositive of the fact that he is of Tamil ethnicity. So where in the record did he prove that he is of Tamil ethnicity?
The government has the passport, but in the passport,
your client also had the burden to disprove the fact that there is rampant document fraud. And you did not do that. You did not show that passport was in fact a valid passport.
Okay. Two responses, Your Honor. First of all, in the passport, there is nothing about ethnicity. It has nothing to do with ethnicity. The passport only talks about whether you are a citizen of Sri Lanka or not. There is no.
So then, how did you show that you are of Tamil ethnicity?
No, there is no other way, you know, because when the court says that you had to provide corroborative evidence in matter of SMJ.
But in a lot of other immigration cases, people have testimony from family members. They have other evidence that shows and proves or disproves certain things that they have to show. So the question is, it's still the burden is on you to show Tamil ethnicity. So how did you show Tamil ethnicity?
Well, in his in the father's birth death certificate, Donna.
It's okay, made but how did you show that the how did you show that the death certificate was valid and not a fraud or a forgery?
Okay, the death certificate, the government or the judge did not say the death certificate could be a fraudulent document based on any other reason. The only reason, the father's name is not correctly spelled in the death certificate. So again, the whole thing, the government, the courts finding that he is not a Tamil, based on the fact that the names are not spelled correctly in the translation.
That's okay, so other than the father's death certificate, is there any other evidence that he is of Tamil ethnicity?
No, Your Honor, because maybe his birth certificate, but his birth certificate was not submitted, because in the driver's license or in any other documents, there is no column that says whether you belong to which ethnicity. There's no other document he can bring to say that his claim was that he is not he is a Tamil. But the document submitted, you know, the mother's letter, it was written in Tamil. The other corroborative evidence were written in Tamil language. And the government's problem is saying the translation of those documents, the name.
Are there members who speak Tamil who are not of Tamil ethnicity?
But, you know, as the government said, you know, Sri Lankan Muslims, but they also identify themselves as a Tamil ethnicity. You know, I don't want to get into the anthropological argument whether Muslims are separate community from Tamils. Muslim majority of the Muslims also speak Tamil. But the government never raised that issue. They did not ask for any kind of a thing whether are you a Muslim or not. This is the first time in the oral argument government is raising the issue, saying that even if you speak Tamil, you could be a Muslim. It's quite possible. But then the other issue, whether Muslims are they belong to Tamil ethnicity or a distinct group, that is a different issue at all, Your Honor.
So let me ask you, so I think I've said already that I generally agree with you that the spelling is pretty irrelevant given the different alphabets between the languages, but the government says that the name was actually spelled differently in the same document, that it was spelled differently in his passport one way and then another way. Could you address that? Is that correct, what the government said?
You know, it is just simply a bureaucratic error, Your Honor. Just one purpose. What purpose does it serve? What purpose does it serve for the one page of the passport page, his name is spelled in one way, the other page in another way? What purpose does it serve? Even if it's going to use it as a fraudulent document, what purpose does it serve? It is a bureaucratic and a typographical error, Your Honor. That's the only thing. This happens all over the world, and these things happen, Your Honor. Because there's no intent there to have two separate names. What purpose does it serve? It doesn't serve any purpose. It was a careless governmental error, Your Honor, bureaucratic error, typo error. So, and right. There's no, sorry.
No, finish up. Go ahead and finish up, please.
No, so in matter of SMJ, the board said if the court wants to ask a particular corroborative evidence, the board has to identify also, okay, these are the particular evidence you could have provided to establish and you didn't provide, that's why you failed the burden of proof. Here, the government, neither the judge nor the DHS did not state what are the other documents he could have provided. It is true that the burden of proof is on him, but if there's no any other documents that explicitly talk about the ethnicity, what are the other documents he could provide? There's no other documents, you know. The passport, as I said, first of all, the passport was in the possession of the government. He doesn't have the opportunity to authenticate, but passport doesn't talk anything about ethnicity. Passport only talks about the citizenship. Only the birth certificate and the death certificate mention the ethnicity of the individual, Your Honor. So here they challenge the ethnicity based on the spelling errors. That's all.
All right. Thank you both very much. We really appreciate the argument. And that concludes our session for this week. Thank you all very, very much for participating and for watching. Court is in recess.
Thank you.
Thank you, yes.